At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Irwin Naidoo, Vice President, Investor Relations. Please go ahead, Mr. Naidoo.
Thank you very much, and good morning. Welcome to Kinross Gold Corporation's conference call to discuss our 2012 second quarter results. With us this morning, we have John Oliver, our Chairman, with Paul Rollinson, our Chief Executive Officer, Paul Berry, our Chief Financial Officer, Brant Hinsey, Chief Operating Officer, as well as Glenn Masterman, our Senior Vice President of Exploration. Before we begin this morning, I'd like to bring your attention to the fact that we will be making forward-looking statements during this presentation. For a complete discussion of the risks, uncertainties, and assumptions which may lead to actual financial results and performance being different from estimates contained in our forward-looking information, please refer to page 2 of this presentation, news release dated August 8, 2012, as well as the management discussion and analysis for the same period, and our annual 2011 management discussion and analysis, as well as our AIF, all of which are available on our website. I'll now turn the call over to John Oliver, the Chairman of Kinross Gold Corporation. Go ahead, John.
Thanks, Irwin, and good morning, everyone. In the wake of our announcement last Wednesday, I wanted to take the opportunity to personally introduce you to our new CEO, Paul Rollinson. Ty Burt made many outstanding contributions to this company, but in the end, the board decided that a change was in the best interest of our shareholders. We were extremely fortunate to have someone with Paul's knowledge, experience, and his skill set as part of our management team to step in as CEO. Paul has been with Kinross for 4 years. He knows the company intimately and is greatly respected by his peers and his fellow employees. We have found him to be an incisive strategic thinker, a practical problem solver. He will hit the ground running, which was a very important advantage given the immediate challenges that we face. Some may think that because Paul is already part of the management team, you can expect more of the same at Kinross. Let me assure you, the status quo is not an option. We are looking for a new approach at Kinross, and we are confident Paul brings a different management style and different focus. Our goal as a board is to continue to build this company, for Kinross to realize its potential for shareholders through the capital and project optimization process that the company has already embarked on and through additional measures focused on enhancing our operational performance. That's the mandate we've given Paul, and that's how we'll measure his performance. An important fact that people should remember is that he is educated both in mining engineering and geology. This was a key factor in his selection. As you will hear from Paul, he intends to be closely focused on operations and the basics of our business. And that is something we are very keen to encourage. On that note, it's time for me to let him speak for himself. So let me introduce our new Chief Executive Officer, Paul Rollinson. Paul?
Thank you, John, for the kind introduction and good morning to you all. I'm honored to be here today as CEO of Kinross to talk to you in the context of our second quarter results. I would first like to acknowledge Ty Burt's contribution to Kinross over the past 7 years. Ty significantly upgraded the portfolio, expanded the production, tripled the resource base, and put in place a solid team of people throughout the organization. Many of you on the call today know Ty well, and I hope you will join all of us at Kinross in wishing him the very best in his future endeavors. Today, I will provide you with a brief overview of what I see as my key priorities in the coming months. I will then ask Paul Berry to provide an update on our quarterly financial results, and Brant Hinsey to provide an update on operations and projects. You will also have seen this morning that I have promoted Brant to the role of President and COO. This appointment underlines our renewed focus on operational fundamentals and reflects the excellent work that Brant has done since joining the company. I have also expanded the roles of two other key members of our senior leadership team to streamline our management structure and to increase the efficiency of decision-making. Jeff Gold will assume responsibility for corporate development in addition to his existing responsibilities as Chief Legal Officer. And Jim Coughlin, who becomes our Executive Vice President, Corporate Affairs, has added investor relations to his existing portfolio of responsibilities. Kinross has a solid foundation in its people and in its assets, and a tremendous potential to generate value. At the same time, our industry is facing some serious challenges with cost escalation, both in new projects and in operations. As well, many producers are encountering difficulties in delivering on project schedules. And all of this has created an erosion of investor confidence, which many gold producers have seen reflected in their share price. Kinross obviously has not been immune to these problems, and there are no easy answers to solving them. That said, I believe that we took a very important first step earlier this year when we announced our capital and project optimization process, which adjusted our framework for growing the company in a much tougher global environment. The board has given me the mandate to continue to advance that process. And as John said, that doesn't mean continuing with the status quo. What it does mean is taking that process to the next level. We need a rigorous, bottom-line driven analysis and a disciplined process in everything that we do. There are three basic principles that will guide our strategy as we move ahead. Number one, managing for value. This is an overarching principle that has to apply to decision making at both our existing operations and at our growth projects. Our focus needs to be firmly on optimizing our free cash flow. I believe the rigorous analysis in the capital and project optimization process is leading us in the right direction to make prudent choices about every dollar we invest. Beyond projects, our next step will be to apply the same level of rigor to the decisions we make at our operations. In general, I believe we need to be much more aggressive in our attack on escalating costs. Obviously, there are costs we can't control, but on those we can control, we're going to get straight to work. To that end, we are initiating a company-wide cost reduction initiative with a focus on reducing operating, capital, and other costs across the organization. We can leave no stone unturned in an effort to cut waste and build free cash flow across the company. We are just getting underway with this initiative, and I expect to have further news to report to you in the weeks and months ahead. This value-driven approach may lead us to make some tough choices, but these are tough times for the industry and for our shareholders, and we won't shrink from what's doing in their best interest, even if it means a break from the past. Number two, focusing on fundamentals. We must deliver on our key metrics at our operations. They are the foundation of our business and the engine, for generating the cash we need to deliver, that we need to deliver a return to our shareholders and to fund growth. We have a solid portfolio of operating mines, and we need to get them firing on all cylinders. Right now, we have some operations that are performing very well, for example, in Russia and North America, and some operations that are not where we would like them to be, for example, in West Africa. I also believe that even operations that are meeting expectations may have the potential to deliver more. One of my first priorities in the coming weeks will be to visit our people on the ground in the regions. I intend to ask a lot of questions and do a lot of listening. I have a particular interest in operations, and I intend to spend a great deal of time working closely with Brant and our operations team to support them in their efforts to improve performance. Getting the fundamentals right also applies to how we work as a company, ensuring our people are focused on the right priorities, improving our decision-making and efficiency, becoming more entrepreneurial, challenging conventional wisdom, and remaining open to new ways of doing things. These will be key priorities for me in the period ahead. And finally, number three, to taking the time to get our projects right. Our capital and project optimization process has underlined the need to ensure we have both the right scale and sequence for our projects. It is also important that they are properly suited to the evolving realities of the industry and fit the parameters of our strict capital allocation framework. At Tasiast, we have made the decision to proceed with a pre-feasibility study for a smaller mid-size mill in the range of 30,000 tons per day. With capital costs rising everywhere and cost overruns a common industry theme, we see potential advantages to a smaller mid-size mill configuration that we can develop with lower capital and less execution risk than a bigger mill, and potentially with the ability to expand down the road depending upon market conditions and capital availability. At Tasiast, we are not offering today an updated timetable for project development, although some delay is likely while we complete the 30,000 ton per day PFS. This underlines our intent to proceed cautiously and deliberately at Tasiast and at all of our projects. This may be viewed as a more conservative approach, but I believe it is appropriate given where we are as a company and given the challenges facing the industry as a whole. That said, and Brant will be talking more about this, I am pleased with our progress at Tasiast, where we have a solid team. I had the honor of meeting Mauritania's President Aziz a few weeks ago. I am very impressed with his administration's expressed desire to support the mining industry and to promote foreign investment generally. I believe that Mauritania has the potential to become one of the world's great mining jurisdictions. In Chile, at Lobo Marte, we are also looking at the option of a smaller scale operation than what we had previously envisaged. And given that Lobo Marte is further back in our development pipeline, and in the interest of reducing our capital spending, we have taken the decision, effective immediately, to limit spending on the project to permitting and further study work. So those are a few of my top-of-mind thoughts as I enter this new role. Obviously, these are very early days for me, and I look forward to having more to share with you in the coming months. I'd like to now hand the call over to Paul and Brant, who will fill you in on the details of our second quarter, starting with Paul Berry, our Chief Financial Officer.
Thank you, Paul. Second quarter revenue was $1 billion, driven by consolidated sales of 641,000 gold equivalent ounces. Second quarter attributable production cost of sales from continuing operations was $725 per gold equivalent ounce, up 27% from Q2 2011, primarily due to increased processing lower grade ore and higher input costs, such as energy, labor, and consumables. Attributable byproduct cost of sales was $658 per gold ounce. Kinross margin per gold equivalent ounce sold was $843 in the second quarter, a decrease of 4% compared with the same period last year, primarily as a result of higher production cost of sales per ounce for the quarter. Second quarter adjusted net earnings from continuing operations were $156 million, or 14 cents per share, compared to $223 million, or 20 cents per share, in the second quarter 2011. Second quarter adjusted operating cash flow from continuing operations was $271 million, or 24 cents per share. Q2 net earnings from continuing operations were $116 million, or 10 cents per share, compared with $244 million for the same period last year. Reported net earnings were lower, mainly due to lower production and increases in production cost of sales, which were offset by a higher realized gold price. Kinross continues to maintain a strong liquidity position. Cash and cash equivalents at June 30th were approximately $1.3 billion. Capital expenditures were $431 million for Q2, compared with $409 million in the second quarter of 2011. The increase was due mainly to project-related expenditures at Tasiast and capital mine development at Fort Knox and Round Mountain. Turning now to our production and cost outlook for 2012, due to the disposition of Kinross 50% interest in Kreshos, we have removed Kinross' share of Kreshos' full-year production forecast of approximately 70,000 gold equivalent ounces from the consolidated 2012 production forecast. As a result, we now expect to produce approximately 2.5 to 2.6 million gold equivalent ounces this year, compared with our previous forecast of 2.6 to 2.8 million gold equivalent ounces. Production cost of sales is expected to be $690 to $725 per gold equivalent ounce as a result of higher production cost of sales per ounce in West Africa and South America. As detailed on slide 7 of the webcast presentation, we have made some adjustments to the production ranges of our regional guidance as South American guidance has been adjusted to reflect the sale of Kreshos, and West Africa has been reduced to reflect lower than expected production from Tasiast. Due to expected higher silver production from continuing operations in 2012, we've also revised our byproduct guidance from continuing operations to 2.35 to 2.45 million gold ounces and 9 to 9.5 million ounces of silver, with byproduct cost of sales expected to be $605 to $655 per gold ounce. We've also adjusted our DD&A guidance. It is now expected to be approximately $235 per gold equivalent ounce compared to our previous guidance of $200 per ounce. Overall, we remain on track to be within our full-year production forecast, excluding the adjustment for the sale of Kreshos. I'll now turn the call over to Brant Hinsey.
Thank you, Paul. Driven by strong results at our operations in North America and Russia, Q2 gold equivalent production increased 8% and production cost of sales decreased 2% compared to Q1 2012. In North America, the production increase at Fort Knox and Round Mountain compared to Q1 was a result of improved heap leach production. Production cost of sales improved for the region compared to Q1 mainly due to higher production. We expect North America production for the full year to be at the high end of production guidance range for the region, as we expect production to increase in the second half of the year, mainly due to accelerated heap leach processing and improved mill processing grades at Fort Knox. At Kupol in Russia, production improved significantly in the second quarter compared to Q1 as a result of record high mill throughput and improved gold grades, offset by the gold to silver ratio. We expect 2012 production to be at the high end of Russian regional production guidance range. In West Africa, regional results for the quarter were negatively impacted by lower than expected production and higher costs at Tasiast. Performance at Tasiast in Q2 was impacted by several factors, including lower than expected mill grades from the Pement ore body, lower than expected dump leach production, and the illegal work stoppage in June, which resulted in 4 days of lost production. With respect to lower than expected mill grades in the Pement ore body, we are undertaking further analysis to better understand the variability in gold grade that has been encountered in the banded iron formation type ore currently being mined in the Pement pits. It is anticipated that mill grades in the second half of 2012 will be lower than previously expected, and that Tasiast production for the second half will be lower than planned. We do not expect that similar grade variability will be encountered in the greenschist-style mineralization in the West Branch ore body. Leach production at Tasiast continued to be impacted in the second quarter by the near-surface felsite in the West Branch. This material was placed on the dump leach and affected gold production from the leach pads. We are now stockpiling the felsite material to be blended and milled at a later date, and the leach pads are now percolating as expected. Additionally, we expect that dump leach production in the second half will be negatively impacted due to inefficiencies in the existing water pipelines, which are reducing the amount of makeup solution available for leaching. We have constructed and commissioned an additional water pipeline drawing water from the current bore field, and repairs will be made to existing pipelines. We expect that water availability will improve as we progress through the second half of the year. Chirano's production for the quarter was lower than Q1 2012 as a result of lower plant throughput, which is due to crusher and mill maintenance issues and periodic electric power outages. Second quarter results of our South American operations were lower year over year, mainly due to anticipated lower grades at Maricunga and lower silver grades at La Coipa, as well as less favorable gold to silver ratio impacting equivalent gold production. Production at Paracatu increased year over year due to higher mill throughput. However, the mine experienced lower grades and recoveries, which contributed to higher unit costs. We expect production at Paracatu to increase in the second half of the year due to higher anticipated grades and expected improvements in recovery and operating efficiencies. The Coipa production is also expected to improve in the second half as the operation shifts from processing mostly lower-grade stockpile material to processing ore from the Can-Can and La Data Farallon pits. We continue to advance the capital and project optimization process with Tasiast and Dvoinoe as our key development priorities. At Tasiast, we analyzed a number of processing options with the aim of identifying the optimum processing approach for the ore body. Based on the extensive analysis and modeling of these options, we have elected to undertake a pre-feasibility study for the construction of a mid-sized CIL mill in the range of 30,000 tons per day with the potential for further expansion. The case for a mid-sized expandable CIL option is based on a better understanding of the Tasiast ore body and mine plans, a better understanding of the operating costs in Mauritania based on our 2 years of experience with the current operation, as well as the impact of current pressures on capital costs that we're experiencing across the industry. Our initial analysis indicates that a more flexible and staged approach to the development of Tasiast, while resulting in lower production in the initial years, may reduce initial capital costs and project execution risk while delivering a rate of return comparable to a larger initial mill. We expect to complete the pre-feasibility study on a CIL mill in the range of 30,000 ton per day in the first quarter of 2013. Heap leach testing will be completed in the fourth quarter of this year, and the results will be evaluated as part of an overall processing strategy. During the second quarter, we received approval from the Mauritanian government for the project EIA, which covers all proposed mining and processing activities that are expected to occur within the mine site boundary under various development scenarios. Construction of the Dvoinoe project progressed well through the second quarter. Underground development is progressing ahead of plan with 1,400 meters completed during the quarter and is now 37% complete. Total underground development has passed 3,700 meters since it began in 2011. Construction of the surface infrastructure and facilities has continued as planned and is 22% complete. Expansion of the temporary camp to 400 beds was completed successfully and now accommodates all construction and underground and exploration personnel. Foundations for the permanent camp are near completion, and the construction of the facility has begun. Construction of the all-season road between Dvoinoe and Kupol has progressed well, and 51 kilometers of the total 84 kilometers are now complete. All necessary permits for the current scope of the underground development and construction activities are in place, The Voinoe remains on schedule to deliver first ore to the upgraded Kupol mill in the second half of 2013. At FDN, negotiations with the Ecuadorian government on an enhanced economic package are progressing, with the objective of reaching balanced agreements on exploitation and investment protection for the project. In July, Ecuador's Ministry of Environment approved the EIA for the construction and operation of the underground mine at FDN, and their review of the EIA for the processing plant is continuing. At Lobo Marte, we have completed a review to identify possible project optimization options with the aim of reducing capital requirements and project execution risk. We are considering smaller project options to those outlined in the pre-feasibility study. Further capital spending will be limited to project studies and permitting activities. Project permitting continues and is expected to be complete in the fourth quarter of 2012. I will now turn the call back over to Paul.
Thank you, Brent. I guess we'll open it up to questions.
We will now begin the question and answer session. Analysts who wish to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. You will hear a tone acknowledging your request. Please ensure you lift the handset if you're using a speakerphone before pressing any keys. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Anyone who has a question may press star and one at this time. The first question is from John Bridges of J.P. Morgan. Please go ahead.
Morning, everybody. Paul, I'm fascinated by how the industry is changing before our very eyes, and in your own case. I just wondered if you could share with us how, if we can sort of follow the money, how your targets, bonus targets and things are focused by the board, and to what extent they've changed from those of Thai.
Sure. Thanks. Thank you, John. Look, I think as John indicated, John Oliver, our chairman, my mandate from the board is clear. It's to continue the capital and project optimization process, but also to implement additional measures to enhance operational performance and the cost reduction initiative.
So is that driven by cash cost targets, EBITDA targets, or how is that working?
Well, look, it's early days. We're going to come back to you in a couple of weeks. I think it's not all about maximizing production or necessarily maximizing NPV. We're going to have to look at the mines on a case-by-case basis, understand what our alternatives are, and for me, the theme is really about optimizing NPV and margin.
Well, what's changed from the package that Thai was working with?
I'm sorry, what was the question? What's changed?
I'm just wondering how the targets have changed. What's changed?
Well, I think we're, we're going to try to be much more aggressive on controlling capital, operating costs, and looking for ways to optimize the assets.
So it's a financial criteria?
Well, I think returns are important. We are very much focused on returns. Yes.
Okay.
But it's
could I just lob in one to Brad? I just wondered why the variability in the cement grade. I just wondered what you think is going on there.
Yeah. What I'll do to help answer this question a little bit more in detail is turn it over to Glenn Masterman, who can explain some of the variability issues that we may be encountering in the cement. Glenn?
Thanks, Brent. John, we've only just identified the problem in recent times. So what we can say at the moment is that the grade variability we're experiencing is restricted to iron formation style mineralization. The problem is only arising in the Pyrmont pits at this point in time. Prolongation was unaffected, and we've not mined enough of our reserves at West Branch to make a meaningful conclusion. The grade variability in the iron formation is related to the complex nature of the mineralisation, which is characterised by short-range discontinuous structures, resulting in high-grade pods surrounded by low-grade. We believe it's going to take us about 6 months to do our work before we're ready to draw meaningful determinations.
And since I've got you there, there was some positive commentary there about exploration, but no numbers. Could you fill us in a little bit on what you're seeing?
Sure, John. We've been exploring two focuses since we wrapped up the definition drilling program last year. We've been stepping out to the south along the mine corridor at a target we're calling West Branch South, so a couple of kilometres from the main West Branch ore body. And we've encountered some encouraging drill results. And obviously, it's very early days and a lot more work to come, but we're pleased with what we're getting there. In the north, or north of the mine, in an area known as a Weewit, so a long strike following the Tassist shear zone, 10 kilometres north of the plant into the district, we've completed a first pass program of drilling, assessing a pretty extensive part of the structure there. And again, we're encountering positive results in the first phase of drilling, where we have a number of targets emerging in that part of the world, and we're currently following up with some drill fences around the initial results to advance those targets. So again, we're pleased with what we're seeing in that part of the world, and we'll be in a position to report full results at the end of the year.
So no barn burning results yet, but you're getting sniffs.
That would be fair to say.
Okay, thank you. Good luck, guys.
Thanks, Glenn. Next question.
Next question is from George Topping of Stifel Nicolaus. Please go ahead.
Great. Hello, everyone. Say, could you comment on the Bloomberg article from yesterday that you've hired an advisor to defend the company?
Yeah, George, we don't respond to speculations in the media. Thank you. Next question.
Next question is from George Barristan of Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Paul. I guess my question is if you could give us a ballpark as to what you're thinking if you go for the smaller mill option at Tasiast, which would be, I'm assuming, roughly half the size in terms of output. Could you kind of give us a ballpark? Would this be half the CapEx cost that last quote were $3.5 billion? Would it be about a 25% less? Could you just kind of give us a ballpark as to what you're thinking would be the capital outlay for a smaller mill package?
Look, Jorge, we can't. We're in the midst of doing the analysis. We'll be back to you once our work is finished. We don't want to make any estimates or speculate at this point.
Okay. And I had flagged this a few quarters ago in my research, but given the importance of Tasiast and proving to the market that the resource is, in fact, really as large as you believe, could you point us to the timing of when you're going to release updated drill results there, other than the vague commentary you included that you're finding, you know, you're pleased with the results? But when could we expect to get updated drilling information from Tasiast?
Glenn, why don't you tackle that one?
Yeah, Jorge, Glenn Masterman here. As I mentioned earlier to John, we'll be in a position to update all of our exploration information, inclusive of drill results, resources, and reserves, at the end of the year.
So basically the same as the answer that Ty had given 6 months ago.
Correct.
Thank you.
The next question is from Alec Kodetskoy of CIBC. Please go ahead.
Hi, Paul. Thanks. Good morning, everyone. Just wanted to sort of circle back on a couple questions on Tasiast with respect to some of the challenges that you're seeing. With the high clay material, how prevalent is this? You say it's near surface. I'm just sort of curious how much of that resource is actually, has this high clay material.
Okay. And again, what I'll do is turn that over to Glenn to answer that. But before I do, I would note, as I said in our opening remarks, we are not putting this material, any felsite material, on the leach pad right now. We're setting it aside, and we'll deal with it later. It will either be blended if we have the appropriate rock competencies in the stuff as we go deeper into the mine, or it'll be put through the mill. But I'll let Glenn give you a little bit more color there on the felsite material itself and the near surface high clay content material.
Thanks, Brent. We believe the clay challenge in the felsite is isolated to the oxidized zone at the top of the felsite host. And as we mine deeper into fresh rock, we anticipate the problem will start to go away.
Okay, so it's sort of still to be determined as far as where it resides. And is that ultimately going to have, as you gain that knowledge, is that going to have an impact in terms of where you see the dump leach going in terms of scale?
I would say with the felsite material, recognizing that that the near surface high clay content material is a bit of an issue for dump leaching. We would expect that at a later date we'll put that through the mill circuit. As far as the dump leach itself, it will certainly impact. It has impacted the first half of this year, and it will continue to impact us in the second half of the year for a couple of reasons. One is we won't be putting as many tons on the leach pad, and as a result of the issues that we encountered in the first quarter, we don't have the inventory built up on the leach pad for leaching. So we will see an impact this year. As far as subsequent years, we'll go into the planning process and we'll make that determination as we go through the budget and planning season this year.
Okay, and I just wanted to clarify, it is a fines issue within the heap that's causing the problem?
Correct. Correct. Fines with a very high clay content.
And sort of a similar question with the Piment pit and the grade variability. Is understanding that, how important is understanding that to the eventual decision on sizing the mill and the economics?
That's a good question. The answer is that they have no relation. What we're encountering in some of the current issues with the current operation has no relation to a decision on a future mill. Keep in mind that the future mill will be primarily designed for the green schist material, which we haven't been encountered yet as far as the mining. I can turn it over to Glenn as well to give some additional color on that too.
So in respect of the green schist zone, which Brant just mentioned, we're confident that the grade variability issue is not going to affect the green schist zone. And that is because it is a different style of mineralization where we see the ore hosted by long-range, wide and continuous structures. We've also done the work to understand the controls on grade distribution in the GST, and this is based on our extensive infill drilling in 2011, and that's put us in a position to model the mineralization with confidence and predictably.
Okay, and just if I could have one more follow-up before I pass it on, I'm just curious if anything's precluded a high-pressure grinding decision yet.
No, I would say at this point, you know, HPGRs, you know, are all part of the optimization process and review. So I would suggest that it's not off the table.
Okay, I'll give somebody else a chance. Thanks very much for the answers.
The next question is from Stephen Walker of RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. Just, Paul, a question on capital spending here in 2012. I believe the total year budget was $2.2 billion with slightly over a billion to be spent at Tasiast in various forms, infrastructure and obviously on the existing operations. Can you give us a sense of, I guess, twofold, what monies will be spent on sort of for the balance of the year, what you hope to achieve in spending on the infrastructure and the operations at Tasiast this year, dollar amount, and then activities that you hope to complete?
Thanks, Stephen. Look, I would say this cost reduction initiative will be looking directly at those sorts of questions. We've just initiated it, but we'll be looking at exactly Tasiast and all of our other projects and operations, and I plan to come back to you in the coming weeks here to flesh out in more detail how that capital budget will be adjusted.
Okay, thank you for that. And in your initial comments, Paul, you made, maybe I misunderstood this, you said some delay is likely for the Tasiast PFS, which is expected in the first quarter 2013. Did I misunderstand that, or was that just something that that I misunderstood, or is that what you actually are implying, that it may be late in the first quarter 2013 before we get the details, or is that timing fairly firm in your mind?
No, I think within the first quarter is fairly firm in our minds, but what we're trying to do here is really get it right, and we're not trying to be aggressive on our timing. We're trying to get the message across that we're here to get it right, most importantly, but we are comfortable with that first quarter.
Understood. Maybe a question for Brant. With respect to the detailed engineering drawings that had been completed at Tasiast, at the Denver Gold Show last year, I had a conversation with management at that time who suggested that 18 to 20% of the detailed engineering drawings had been completed. And I guess the question is twofold, Brant. Where do you stand with respect to detailed engineering at this stage, you know, granted that you're kind of starting some of the analysis over from scratch if you're looking at a 30,000 ton per day plant? Where do you stand on the percentage of detailed engineering drawings done, and how much of the current work can be carried over into the new pre-feasibility study? I guess what I'm trying to get a sense of is, do you have to wipe the slate clean, or is there a percentage of some of the detail engineering work that's been paid for and done is carried into the PFS?
Yeah, I can certainly comment on that. Let me first say that, you know, when we talk about a pre-feasibility study, you know, obviously at a pre-feasibility level, you know, we have a pretty intense knowledge, in-depth knowledge of the resource itself, and we've got pretty advanced. We've advanced a lot on our mine plans at this point. So what we have there and our knowledge there and our knowledge of the mine plans is probably more advanced than pre-feasibility level. However, you know, when you do go back to the plant and plant size, you know, we have taken it back to scoping study so that we can conduct the optimization process, and then that scoping study, which, you know, we have completed, we've done a full peer review on that scoping study, and now we have approval from the board of directors to advance that to pre-feasibility. So the process of scoping, pre-fees, and fees is ongoing, and then detailed engineering will come subsequent to that. So I would say that we are walking through the process of a proper process to, as Paul said, get it right, and we're not going to rush that along.
So it's safe to say well below 20% of detail engineering, and probably something closer to 10% at this stage.
Well, that's, you know, again, you know, from a standpoint of the study itself, you know, we just completed the scoping study, and going into pre-feas. So, depending upon what the ultimate selection is, you know, that will determine, you know, whether any of the detailed engineering that was done before will apply. So we'll, I guess the word is stand by as we go through the process.
Understood. Glenn, just one last quick question. With respect to the greenschist mineralization at depth, where you've obviously wrapped mine plans around, what drill density have you drilled that down to? Is it 25 meter, 50 meter, in an area that you'd view as sort of the core, you know, mining, where you want to start your core mining? What is the drill density at this stage?
The drill density at the top of the greenschist zone is on average spaced around 35 meter centers. As we get deeper into the ore body, that spacing increases to 70 meters, and we're confident that spacing, or in that spacing, because of our knowledge of the geologic continuity of the ore body, so we're able to step it out as we got a little deeper.
Great. Thank you very much for that.
The next question is from Greg Barnes of TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you, operator. I guess this is for Paul or for Brad, but when do you finally draw a line in the sand and say, Tassius, this is what we're going to build? Is it the middle of next year, first quarter of next year? When do you put a stake in it?
Thanks, Greg. It's Paul here. Look, I guess the answer to that is once we finished our work. And we haven't finished our work, and as a result, we're not in a position to make a recommendation. We are pursuing the pre-fees on the 30, but we're still tweaking the 60 and looking at mine planning and phasing and optimization with that scenario as well. So I can't tell you when we're going to finish that work and be in a position to make a recommendation.
But when you do make the recommendation, I think this goes back to Steve's question, does that mean you are then moving into feasibility study?
Yeah, I mean, we will absolutely. I mean, that's the process. You know, going from scoping to pre-fees, we will complete the pre-feasibility work. We will make a recommendation to the board of directors, and based on that recommendation and approval, we'll move forward to feasibility study.
And it's fair to say that'll take another 12 to 18 months after that decision is made.
Don't know. You know, again, what we're going to do is let the process determine the schedule.
I know you're still working on the heap leach plan, but that seems to be taking very much a back seat. Is that true?
No, I wouldn't say necessarily that's taken a back seat. We've got a lot of work that is currently being done, a lot of test work that's currently being done in the labs for leach testing. You know, we have done the high-pressure grind work in Germany, and we have shipped all the material to McCullen Labs in Reno, and they're doing all the leach work for us. And we're at various columns are at various progress as far as the leach cycle. So, you know, ranging from, you know, now just a few days to, you know, over 40 days of leaching. But it's too early. We don't have complete information. We do, as I indicated, expect to see most of this information back in the fourth quarter of this year.
Thanks, Brad. Just finally for you, Paul, you said a couple of times now you're going to update us in a couple of weeks about what your plans, I guess, in terms of cost reductions and project optimizations will be. You're going to come out with targets and rates of return, and which projects you're going to shelve and which you're going to move forward on. Is that the idea?
Yeah, no, I would say, look, Greg, I've been in the role for 7 days, My plan is to get out to the regions next week with Brent. I would like to come back in a few weeks and outline the plan, but and give more detail on direction and process. But we're not going to have this evolved to that degree in a couple of weeks. It's going to be a process we work on here through the fall.
So what do you plan to tell us in a couple of weeks? Just where you're heading?
Yeah, exactly. More detail on how we're going to go at this cost reduction initiative.
Okay. Thanks, Paul.
Yep.
The next question is from Anita Soni of Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys. My question is with regards to, I guess, one of your earlier comments, Paul, that you commented on costs that you can control and costs that you can't. Can you sort of give us an idea of which, you know, which costs fall in the can control camp and the ones are that you feel or you don't have any control over?
Well, sure. I mean, the obvious sort of can't control is oil prices and steel and consumables and media, those kinds of global commodities. Costs we can control are our own internal, the people, our overhead, our G&A, our spend, things within our control we will look hard at. Obviously, we've got to work within the bounds of the global commodity requirements that we use in our business. We're big consumers of oil, we're big consumers of power, and we're big consumers of steel, and we have very little control over that.
Okay. With respect to the decision to, I guess, stop spending at Lobo Marte, it sounds like you were saying it was more tied to the schedule or the, you know, that it was further down in your development pipeline. If the framework for sort of making investment decisions, I guess, now is more along a financial basis, would you not bring that back into the fray and put it sort of, you know, head-to-head against Tasiast and say, you know, perhaps this is what we need to focus on first, whether or not we had previously said that this would go ahead in 2016 or 17, and perhaps this is the one we need to accelerate, and while we're taking our time to study Tasiast, this is the one that we need to go. I mean, why shelve Lobo Marte for now?
Well, thanks for the question. I mean, really, the capital and project optimization process that we announced in January was really to make those kinds of decisions. And as part of that review and study, we've determined that that there needs to be a sequence, and that in that sequence, we believe that Lobo is one that we would stack out behind Tasiast and FDN.
So I guess what I'm driving at is what were the key drivers that made you decide that Lobo needed to go after Tasiast? I'm trying to understand why that decision on timing was made.
I think, you know, Tasiast has been a key focus for the company. We are well and truly into it. There's a lot of activity, a lot of spend, and the work and the knowledge and the understanding is much more evolved than is the case with Lobo Marte.
Okay, thank you.
I would also suggest that we didn't say that we're stopping spending. We said we're stopping site activity. So we're continuing to advance permitting, and we're continuing to advance the studies.
Great, thank you.
The next question is from David Houghton of BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, Paul, Brandt, and Glenn. Obviously, a lot of questions on Tasiast, so I'll put my questions in on that theme as well. You've mentioned quite a few times your detailed understanding of the geology and the ore body. The introduction of the 30,000 tons per day option, is that as a result of the change in understanding of the ore body, or is it more a reflection of the cost and the infrastructure demands?
I would offer up that the knowledge of the resource itself has been advancing. With the extensive drilling program that we had last year, and the full interpretation of that, and as well too, the advancement of mine plans, you know, our knowledge has been evolving on that resource itself. And I would also suggest, you know, as Paul mentioned, you know, looking at the cost pressures in our industry, in particular, we've seen what has happened with some of the capital blowouts around the industry. It certainly does have enter into our decision process.
Okay. Given the first part of your answer, then Brent, does that mean that the higher grade portion of the ore body that would be best suited to milling is smaller than what you had previously envisaged, and that the lower grade halo is greater?
No, it doesn't suggest that at all. And what I'll do is I'll turn it over to Glenn so that you know he can. Add some additional information to this discussion.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brent. David, the ore body, and I'm referring specifically here to the Grinchia zone, which constitutes the bulk of the resource, remains unchanged based on our evolving knowledge and what we've communicated previously. So we still see a higher grade portion and a lower grade envelope around the ore body. And in other words, the gold is still in the ground. There is no change to that.
Yeah, and I would say that the change is in, you know, the approach that we take with it, and it has a lot to do with the mine planning and the sequencing of the pits and the phases.
Okay, and there is a suggestion that it could be a modular kind of build, so that you might get to a larger 30,000 tons per day eventually, depending upon cash flow and the ability to supply ore. Does that also then feed into the kind of regional work that Glenn has been doing as well?
You know, there's no doubt. I mean, we're in the early stages of our understanding of this entire district. You know, we got 80 kilometers to understand, and given that fact, it's just prudent on our part, if we do advance to construction of 30,000 ton a day, that we advance that with the thought of expandability. So I would suggest absolutely we do need to consider this. If we do make the decision to construct a 30,000 ton a day, we consider it an entry into the district.
Okay, and the infrastructure would have to be provided accordingly then, with the view of perhaps this being one of a multi-stage development.
Sure, absolutely.
Switching over to Paracatu, fourth ball mill coming into place this quarter, would you expect the plant two to get up to the 41,000 tonnes a day kind of level through the back end this year into the early part of next year? Is that the kind of throughput that we should be thinking about?
I would say that with the addition of the fourth ball mill, and recognizing that, you know, part of the reason for the fourth ball mill was to, you know, compensate for increases as we go deeper into the mine of hardness. Mm-hmm. But I would suggest that there's every expectation right now to achieve our goals with that fourth ball mill addition.
Okay, so a much stronger 2013 ahead in comparison than to 2012 as a result of that additional grinding capacity.
You know, as far as 2013, you know, as we go through the budgeting and planning process this year, you know, we'll certainly give some guidance on that as we work through it.
All right, and finally on Lobo Marte, had a few discussions there during the course of this call, but are you still looking at this as a regional solution? Are you still trying to integrate this potentially in with the existing Maricunga and La Coipia projects? Is that going to add to the timeline of your decision-making on this project?
I would say that you know, there are numerous opportunities to take advantage of synergies there, and Lobo Marte, when we do make a development decision on that, would certainly be part of it.
All right. Thank you very much, Brent.
The next question is from Don McLean of Paradigm Capital. Please go ahead.
Oh, good morning, guys. Paul, you could have picked an earlier seven or easier 7 days to start with. Good luck to you.
Thank you, Don.
And I think David Houghton captured the essence of, I guess, my question. But, you know, in the kind of market we have right now, when you see words like, you know, a better understanding of the Tasius ore body and, you know, possible potential for future write-downs, I mean, those are kind of, those are big net type comments. And in this market, you know, that tends to be read as fairly ominous. So what I was just going to ask you and the guys to do is maybe give a bit more color and more character to that comment about the better understanding of your body. And I think Glenn's touched on some of that, you know, with his confidence about the green schist. But has there been any substantial change to the view of, you know, what the resource quality quantity was compared to when you entered into the transaction with Redback?
Glenn?
You know, give us a sense of maybe boost our confidence.
Don, I'll comment on, I guess, the character of the ore body and how that's evolved to relative to when we took the keys to the project. And that is that it's lived up to our expectations in terms of resource quantity and quality. So,
both in quality, and when you talk about quality, are you referring to grade, or is it the sort of the continuity relative to the strip ratio, Glenn?
Don, it's both of those factors. It's the continuity was one of the I guess attributes that impressed us very early on, and we've established that deeper in the ore body, so we're confident about that. And the grade, the green schist zone, is the higher grade portion of the resource, and it's been modelled with a high degree of confidence and predictability.
I guess metallurgy has been a bit of a and typically is unknown when you step into these things, but has been a bit of a concern. What portion of the green schist zone would maybe come into this issue about clay or the oxidized surface that might be impacted on the heap leach side of the equation, Glenn?
Don, based on what we know at the time, at this moment in time, is that the green schist ore body will not be affected by this clay problem. The clay is developed at a very high level in the oxidized zone of the ore body. So, in other words, the top part of the ore body. As we get deeper into the fresh rock sulfide zone, the clay does not become an issue. The other point to note is that the clay challenge is isolated to a rock known as the felsite. We're not seeing it in any of the other rock types. Rock types hosting ore, such as the iron formation and the green schist zone. So we're confident that it's not going to be an issue for us as we get deeper in the ore body.
Okay, and maybe sort of on that thought, Glenn, I think when John Bridges was asking his questions about the exploration, and the sort of the final comment was no barn burning results to this point, but lots of sniffs. If you look at the amount of money that's been spent on the exploration, I guess as an observer, but I think a lot of us feel this way, we're kind of surprised that something else hasn't jumped out that's of substance to this point. But maybe you could characterize how well explored that trend is and your optimism on that front.
Sure,
maybe,
Don.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how well explored is it?
On a scale of 1 to 10, it's, I would say, in terms of effective exploration, less than 5, so a long way to go. And you know, we're really just getting started in a type of district that takes many years to explore and be successful. And of course, as we go, we're learning a lot about the geology and how to target where the next ore body may be. I'll just come back to my initial comments about the exploration work to the north of the plant in the Iwiwit area, about 10 kilometres north. Our first pass of drilling along the Tarsius structure delivered very encouraging results on many of the sections we drilled. And so for a first pass, we are really pleased with those results. Obviously, a lot more work to come. And as I mentioned, it's in terms of effective exploration, it's very early days.
Great. Well, wish you good luck on that. Good hunting. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
The next question is from Stephen Butler of Canaccord. Please go ahead.
Well, Paul, a question for you on FDN project. Do you guys have a sense of your timeline for concluding a revised fiscal agreement there? And what would you need? What would you prefer to see? Obviously, lower taxes overall, but is there a trigger here where you would say, let's go ahead based on a 5 or 10% or just below 52% tax burden?
Yeah, I look, it's we're in the middle of a negotiation with the government, as you know, Steve. I think those negotiations are progressing well.
Mm-hmm.
We recently saw a bit of a trial balloon where the government has acknowledged that it's considering changes to the windfall profits tax. So, look, I think it, in my opinion, it remains one of the best undeveloped ore deposits in the world. It's moving along, but our spend and our rate of development will depend on a successful completion to our negotiation on the exploitation and the investment agreement. But given the sensitivity of that, I wouldn't want to speculate on specific triggers or details.
No, that's fine. Brant, and the theme of striving for lower costs, maybe in your biggest asset, or at least contributor to NAV for me, is Piracatu, but you know, costs of $914 an ounce in Q2. And if we were to get to reserve grade, and if we were to get to about, I think, 79% target recovery, those costs on Q1 would have been maybe $800 an ounce. But are you thinking costs here can be lower than that, ultimately, longer term? Will the fourth ball mill drive unit cost per ton lower, or will it actually just represent more power consumption and therefore higher cost per ton as an offset? Thanks.
Yeah, and I appreciate the question. Going into the second half of the year, we certainly see Paracatu performing better than the first half. We'll see better grades there. We expect to see better recoveries, and we've got an enhanced team in there. We've supported the existing team with some real strong people. And we expect to continue to improve efficiencies out of that plant. You know, keep in mind, and I think it's probably really important to note that that we've been building that thing for 3 years, and it's actually going to be a pleasure to have the fourth ball mill constructed and allow our people to actually get in there and operate that thing and optimize that plant. And focus on costs, and that's as Paul mentioned earlier, that's going to be a big theme for us across all of our operations and all of our projects, to focus on costs, both operating and capital costs, and do everything that we need to do and that's rational to do in optimizing and improving costs.
Right.
And that includes Paracatu.
Sure. Do you guys have any REI costs or considering any REI hedging, excuse me?
We do. This is Paul Berry, the CFO, and we've got a program to hedge our currency, our foreign currency exposure over 3 years. It's a rolling monthly program, but about 75% of our REI exposure is hedged in year one, some 50% in year two, and 25% in the third year. And we've had that in place now for about a year.
Right. Okay. Thanks, Paul. That's it.
Thanks, Steve.
This is all the time we have for questions on today's call.
Thanks, everyone.
This concludes today's conference call. You may disconnect your lines. Thank you for participating, and have a pleasant day.